Okay, we're taping Tzfanya. Okay, so from the evidence at the beginning of the book, it would appear that Tzfanya is the very beginning of Yoshiyahu's reign. Because if he speaks about the trespass of the Baal worship, then it means that Egel worship, which is directed to God, and Bamos worship, which is certainly directed to God, he doesn't even bother to address. So Baal is a problem, Egel worship and Bamos worship are small fish to fry. Right? And it says in Sefer Melachim and Divrei Hayamim that Yoshiyahu got rid of even all the Bamos. So if there's Baal worship still going on, that's got to be at the very beginning of his tenure as king, which would mean that he precedes Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu started giving the war in the 13th year of Yoshiyahu, 5 years before that book was found, and Tzfanya is even before that. Okay? Okay, it could be that the reason why they didn't give the book to Yirmiyahu to interpret, and they gave it to Chulda, was, remember, Yirmiyahu started giving prophecy as just a nar. By his own word, he says, I'm just a youngster. He's giving prophecy for 40 more years, and then for many years afterwards, even until they take it down to Egypt, how old must he have been at that time? So even if he started giving prophecy in his early 20s, he's got to be 70, 80, 90 by that time, right? So, assuming that Yirmiyahu starts off as a nar, that book was found when 5 years later, when he was in his early 20s, it could be that Chulda and Tzfanya are much more seasoned prophets, and therefore they took it. They didn't take it to Yirmiyahu. That being said, I will tell you that the Gemara in Arachin and Megillah says that Yirmiyahu was not consulted about the book they found because he was outside of Israel. He was busy bringing the representatives of the 10 tribes back to Israel. Right? Because Yechezkel threatens that if you don't change your immorality, you will lose the institution of Yovel. Now, Yovel is not kept when the 10 tribes are not in Israel. So if the 10 tribes were already not in Israel, what's here Yechezkel threatening to end an institution that's already been ended? If not for the fact that it was continued because Yirmiyahu brought representatives of the 10 tribes back. So he was out busy doing that, and that's when the book was found, so that it wasn't taken to Yirmiyahu. A more likely reason is that Yirmiyahu was just too young. Okay? Alright, so he refers in Pasuk Dalet, Hey, involved to all the types of trespasses that people are doing, and they're idolatrous. That's got to be the beginning of Yoshio's reign. By the middle of his reign, these things didn't exist anymore. That's what you read in Haftarah, the first day of Shabbat Pesach. Has nipnei Hashem Elokim, Pasuk Zion. Everybody's silent. The prophet says to all those who will understand, Ki karov yom Hashem, ki echin Hashem zevach ikdish kruav. He calls this day the day of God. Right? Is it a good day? Is it a bad day? Not in Malachi, not in Amos. He called across Elokecha Yisrael. Prepare to meet your Maker. Usually something said in the framework of an apocalyptic destruction, would you say? Prepare to meet your Maker. You hear that saying? Right? Lifnei bo yom Hashem hagadol v'hanora. That's bad stuff is about to happen.
Bad
subjective. Yeah, you know, bad for us. The Gemara at the end of Sanhedrin says many rabbis said, "I don't want to be alive at that time because I don't want to have to go through the birth pangs. I just want to be there for the baby." Yeah, that's what they call Chevle Mashiach, because it's very painful, but we know that it's going to give birth to something that that part will enjoy. Right? Okay, so he says, "V'hayav b'yom zevach Hashem ufakadeti al asurim v'al bnei hamelech." When that slaughter comes, I'm going to take my vengeance out on all those leaders. Now look what he says at the end of Pasuk Ches. Ve'al kol halov shim malbush nachri. And all the people who dress like the goyim. Have you heard that? When chukos ha-goyim? Right? So we derive from here is that Tzfanya was decrying this habit of the Jews trying to look like non-Jews. I'm a big stickler on this, but you know, when Muslims all over the world have no trouble, you know, with their distinctive dress, why shouldn't you be afraid to walk with the yarmulke down the street?
What was he afraid of? Chil Hashem? Just don't act like a Chil Hashem.
Right? I feel very strongly about this. Forget about the halachos, not eating or davening without the yamos, or not walking down amos. That's maybe the specifics, but still, I'm very much a stickler about this. My father is someone younger than you guys, who was brutally beaten in the ghetto because they made the Jews walk without yarmulkes. They pulled out their beards, and they had different ghettos and different things, obviously. But the Jew always said, if someone walked by, if you had a hat on, they didn't let you wear a hat in the yarmulke. And he always had his teeth knocked out, and his pants were mangled because he insisted my people wearing it, keep on wearing his yarmulke. So now today we should be afraid to New York City to fill any yarmulke. So what? So that we can look like the Nochrim? I get it. The very first tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein, written in the 50s, was about going to job interviews or being an accountant someplace where you have clients or real estate, and you're afraid. Your boss is afraid. Your boss is also Jewish. Is afraid that you might not get the client if you see the yarmulke. That does exist. It's a mitzvah. You can't disregard it. I think in many, many places they'll hopefully, if you're, should be a Kiddush Hashem. Obviously, there's a movie called Gentleman's Agreement with Gregory Peck. It's one of the best pictures in 1946. It's about a Gentile reporter who wants to write a piece on anti-Semitism. So he changes his last name, moves to New York, and makes believe he's Jewish. And he shows all the anti-Semitism he confronts. And one day he gets a job, and the secretary looks at him and says, I see your name is Green. You're one of us? He goes, yes, yes, I'm Jewish. He goes, why didn't you change your name? He goes, I didn't realize I had to. He goes, well, I just hope you're not like one of those kike Jews. So he says, what's a kike Jew? And this is a Jew talking to him. Right? What's a kike Jew? Well, the ones who take off early in the wintertime, the ones who are always taking off on Saturday, the ones who take off on the holidays. Those are the kike Jews. Just blend in, be like everybody else. Right? Okay, look, when the Zohar and Megillah says that Haman made his claim against the Jews, his main claim was they were always saying Shehi Pei. Shehi Pei. You ever hear that? That's Haman's diatribe against the Jews. Shehi Pei. You ever see what that means? Look at Rashi. What does Rashi say? It says Shabbos Hayom, Pesach Hayom. the Jews are always running around. Oh, I have to leave work early. Shabbos! I have to leave work early. Pesach!
That's the website. It's today a Jewish holiday.com.
Really?
It has to do with yes or no.
Really?
What year was that?
It's a Jewish website.
Yeah.
It's your employer to know.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
It's a check. They don't know.
Well, the Muslims are starting to get in on it also. So, I'll tell you this though. I worked in the hospital at a very young age. At that time, you'd be working babies at like 14, 15. At the age of 14, I was working in a hospital. And my father was a director of engineering in the hospital. He told us, you always volunteer Thanksgiving, December 25th, January 1st. At all the time where, most of the people working there were Gentiles, you always volunteer, do double shifts on Thanksgiving. Double shifts on January 1st. Because if you take off on your holidays, of course, I would lose my job before working on Yom Tov. But if you take off on your holidays, and you're AWOL when it comes time for their holidays, then you bring that stuff on yourself.
True.
Right?
Agreed.
They'll say Shehi Pei if you take off Shabbos and Pesach and on their holidays. Okay? Got it? I need you to cover my shift for my holiday because I can't work on my holiday. Alright, so then you need to be there for them on their holiday.
Well, with certain jobs, like you're like certain my vacation days, I know people just use those vacation days.
Okay, no,
so fine. Like,
okay, fine, I understand that. Okay, alright, so.
What's your opinion about wearing a kippa in the workplace?
I just told you about that true river of motion. I'm very much a stickler that we should wear a yarmulke anywhere and everywhere. I grew up in a really, really tough neighborhood. You wore your yarmulke. I think yesterday in the post I saw the word that you had to, the word scramble was yarmulke. Right? It means yorei meka. It should be yarmiyo. It's yorei, fear God, yarmulke. Get it? What's the etymology of this word?
I think
thought it's Yoreh Malkah.
It could be. Yoreh Malkah. Yoreh Malkah. You fear the queen? Which queen? Okay, ufakadati al kol hadoleg al hamiftan bayomahu hamemalim beis adonayim chamasim mirma. This refers to a certain type of idolatrous worship. We're not so familiar with it, but the certain way that they would come to their holy places to worship. Okay, right. So he describes with great. Quite a great detail, right? The cries that are going to be heard in these places, right? And Rav Yosef Kara here on this addresses these descriptions of destruction, and he says that they refer to specific places in Israel, in Lud, in Tzipori, in Tveria, Akko. Right. Okay, that is the. And then he says, "Va'yoba Isaiah, meaning Pasuk Yudbeis, in that day, Achapesis Yerushalayim Baneros, I'm going to look up Yerushalayim with candles. Pekadati al Anashim Akofim al Shimreim, Harmim Bil Bavam Lo Yitiv Hashem Lo Yireya. I'm going to find all those Jews who say I can't hurt and I can't do good." That's the terminology we use for Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah can't make it anything better for you, and it can't make anything worse for you. So what are you bothering with it? That's what the people said about Hashem. Right? And I am going to search you out with candles. This is the pasuk that everyone brings for why we have to do Bedikas Chametz with candles, Dafka. It's traditional to look for things with candles. Right? It seems to be preferable to use a flashlight. Because then you're not afraid of igniting your clothing or something, right? If you do Bedikas Chametz with a navuka, with like a Havdalah candle, even if you finished already, you have to do it again because you might be too afraid of a navuka. You wouldn't be yotze with navuka. Yeah. So that seems to be best. Anyway, this is the part of the old quote about searching with candles. So this pasuk sounds like Tovah Chaim Dvorim. You'll build houses, you won't sit in them. You'll plant fields, you won't eat of the yavul of the fields. All right, Karov Yom Hashem Agadol, Karov Maher Maod. The day of God is very close; it's coming quickly. Kol Yom Hashem Mar Tzareach Sham Gibor. So we talked about already before about the Yom Hashem that you referred to before. This is not a good day; it's a bad day. And the rest of this Perek Aleph ends with very serious description and detail of destruction. Right? Corpses will lie out in the streets, no one to bury them. And he gets to business right away about how bad things are going to be. Now, he only has three chapters. So Yirmiyahu, if he starts like this, has plenty of time to fix things. But this is only three chapters. And he says, he's kosher shuba kosher. Remember I told you about a half hour ago about the most famous pasuk in Tanya, this is it. He's kosher shuba kosher, which means judge yourself and then judge someone else. However, while that is what Chazal say about this pasuk, good mitzvah is David, chipsu atzmechem achar ha'averos shebiyedchem lashuv mehem. Chazal say, look deep into your own deeds. But Targum says, "Iskanshu," means gather, like Makoshish Eitzim. It's gathering wood. Remember the guy in Parshas Chukas? Iskoshishu Makoshu Hagoylo Nitzav. You'd better all gather together because some bad things are happening. Okay. The leadership at this time was very lacking. Yirmiyahu complains in chapter 2 of his book, the Kohanim are leading you astray, the Chachamim are leading you astray, the Roim are leading you astray, the Neviim are leading you astray, everyone who should be a leader amongst you. The Tofsei Torah, the people who are Chachamim, who are grabbing onto Torah, even they're leading you astray. There's no one to tell you the right path. Now, what is that right path? Okay, tshuva. You know what? That's not even it. The right path is to just let what's about to happen happen. Let the Babylonians come and take over the land. Okay? What this, the beginning of Perek Beis shows is that Yehoshua was saying, you don't have a chance because the leadership is so lacking. Okay? That's how I derive Chazal's understanding of the beginning of this era. Okay? Okay? Now he goes, look at Pasuk Dalet, it shows that Tzfan has a sense of humor a little bit. Okay? Take a look at what he says is going to happen to some of these cities along the coast. Look at Perek Beis, Pasuk Dalet. Micha does this, Hosheva does this. They use puns. Yishayahu does this. Right? Yishayahu says, I was hoping for Mishpat. And what did I get instead of Mishpat? What did I get instead of justice? Injustice. No. He says, instead of justice, I got Mispach. Mispach? Mispach is a scam. Instead of justice, I got scams. And I was hoping for tzedakah. And instead of tzedakah, I got tzedakah. You know, if you were translating this into another language, that would be ridiculous. But obviously, what is Yishayahu doing?
Poetry.
He's engaging in alliteration and poetry. He's substituting one letter in each case. Right? You get it? Okay. Everyone see it? How is Tzfani doing that in Pasuk Dal? He says, Ki azo azuvo tihiye. V'ashkelon v'shmo. Asho v'tzarayim v'goshuha v'ekron teokir. I don't know, I could have done better a little bit with this pasuk. Ekron teokir, that's very clever. Ekron will be uprooted. In English it doesn't sound like anything. But to uproot in Hebrew, it sounds like ekron, right? But what about the city Ashkelon? Come on. Once you're doing this, Tzfanya, why don't you say Ashdod will be
Shadeh
or Shadad? Right? You have a perfect Hebrew word for when something bad is going to happen to Ashdod. And you didn't say it. I don't know. I can't get Tzfanya's head on this. Right? Okay. Ashkelon, I could have also said, well, its sins will be weighed out. Mishkal, or something like that. Alright, he did a good job with Aza and Ekron. Okay, Ho Yoshei Chevel Hayom, Goy Kresim. Hashem Alechem, Nan, there's a vision. So he's talking about the people along the coast. Gee, I wonder why. What tends to be on the coast?
Or
South Beach, sure. You know, sun worshippers, swimmers, you know, people lazy. I have to tell you a fascinating. I just saw it in the Yalkut Me'amla ways, I think is where I saw it. This is what it says. It says that when Avraham came, I think it's in the Tzid. You know, it's totally in the Tzid. This week's Parsha, what am I saying? In Parsha's Acharemos, it says, don't act according to the minhagim of Egypt, where you just left, and don't act according to the wicked customs of Canaan, where I'm taking you. Sound familiar? Perfect test, right? So the Netziv cites a pasuk in, a medrash in Parshas Lech Lecha, the Gracious Rabbah, where it says that Abraham, when he got to Canaan from Mesopotamia, from Aram Naharaim, you all with me? Right? That when Abraham made his way to Canaan, he was somewhat enthused by the fact that he saw that the people were engaged in commerce and nation building. They were planting. That they were not steeped in Avodah Zarah. So which one is it?
Was a Canaan a place of horrible Avodah Zarah or not? Right? So the Netziv could have explained that at the time Abraham came there, it wasn't such a place of Avodah Zarah. But by the time he came, 500 years later, or at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, 400 years later, that by that time it became a place steeped in Zima and despicable practices. Right? With me? Instead, the Netziv says the following. Where did Abraham come from? Aram and Arai, right? Where did he go? Beersheba, Hebron. Where is that in the land of Israel? The heartland, the middle of the land, right? Abraham didn't go to the coast and then come back to Hebron, right? So the Netziv says that it's pretty clear from the real estate. Where do licentious people? Where were they? They didn't go on the coast. The coast is always the nightlife. Would you say? Right. So it's funny that we have Netanya, Tel Aviv, and Haifa, and Nahariya, LA, and South Beach. Right. So that's what he's saying here. What's going on? He said, "What's the problem with these people? Because the Oshvei Chevel Hayam go crazy." People who stay on the coast. I know it's the people who behave like the Philistines and Canaanites. Right?
That's how he refers to the people of Yehuda who start to dress like them and start to behave like them. That's where you're going to get yours. Okay? Alright. And he refers in Perek Beis, like Yirmiyahu does, to a host of nations that Bnei Israel are trying to behave like. You'll share their fate, and he too describes the fate of some of those nations. Okay. All right. So, chapter 3, which we will start next class, and then we'll finish it quickly, and I'll give you some review. Chapter 3 describes the preparation for the ultimate redemption. So he has two bad chapters. We haven't seen anything pretty good yet, right? But chapter 3 is a preparation for the redemption. So Tzfanya only has three chapters. At least a third of them is some kind of preparation for the good day that we'll hopefully see. Okay, let's still continue.